Yeah.
All right. Jimmy Doan Show back again. Another podcast here. This is great. September 1st. I got that
mojo. Oh my gosh, it's already September 1st.
It is already September 1st. Hard to believe. We're coming up on the, in 3 weeks, to come up on the equinox. And, of course, this Saturday, the Gators have their first game, I guess, against Wyoming. Yeah, well, I know it is.
Hey, that's great.
So anyway, this is Jimmy Doan, once again on the podcast, and we've got a few people here today. Want to go around, Curtis?
Hey.
Okay, and EJ.
Happy to be here.
Good deal. And Engineer Eric.
What's up?
What's up? So we got some new equipment. We finally got one of the new Rode, I call them Rode microphones, Rode NT1000.
Wow. That's pretty sexy. It's right in front of me. My gosh.
It's a big one. It's a big one.
It's the biggest thing I've ever had in front of my mouth. I'll tell you that much.
Ooh, don't go there. listen, but anyway, before we get too far down, and actually this is a little bit what we want to talk about today has to do still with the hurricane.
Katrina,
yes. Katrina. I made light of it. Of course, the last podcast we did was, what, 2-3 days ago? And at that time, we didn't know. I think it was still offshore. And we didn't know what the damage was.
Well, it had hit, but the levees hadn't broken.
The levees hadn't broken. That's right. So we made kind of light of it, and now of course it's obviously a lot more than that. It's pretty much of a national disaster, and so I want to sort of apologize a little bit.
I got a new song for him.
You do?
Yeah, from New Orleans. If it keeps on raining,
levees gonna break. You don't think anybody's playing that, do you? If it keeps on
raining. I thought it was fairly appropriate.
Oh, yeah. When
the levee breaks, have no place. But they were warning about this in 1969.
Yeah, they've
been warned.
Well, no, in fact, I think it flooded, 50, 60, 70 years ago. It did flood one time. I'm totally, this is not the first time.
No.
It's the first time in a couple of generations, I think. But what did you expect kind of thing? If you're 15 feet below sea level, I think that...
And you're right on the sea.
Right.
And you're right on a major river, the largest river in the country.
And Lake Pontchartrain.
And...
Which is also 9 feet above you. So yeah. that's what broke as much as anything was the Lake Pontchartrain levee.
It's sort of like living like at the base of the aquarium and looking at Shamu saying, man, I'm glad that wall's still here.
Yeah.
But what if it wouldn't?
Yeah. Well, that's, of course, what happened was, it's as I've always said, it's kind of to paraphrase an old margarine ad, it's not nice to fool with Mother Nature. And that's what they've, the arrogance of the Corps of Engineers, I guess, and so forth, has decided that they could hold back the waters like King Canute. You know the story about King Canute? King Canute was a king.
No.
Yes.
As opposed to a bishop.
As opposed to a bishop, right. The story, the mythology, I think he was a real king, but he had a lot of, as we call, sycophants, in his entourage. And they claimed that he was God on earth, could do anything. And he said, well, I can do anything. They said, yes, oh, Lord, oh, Master, you can do anything. He says, well, I can hold back the sea. And they, oh, yes, of course you can. So he had him carry him down to the tide waters, whatever it is, to the ocean, beach, whatever. And he held up his hand and commanded the surf not to come in. And, of course, it came in. And he said, see, I guess the lesson there, as it were, is...
You want to hold back the sea, have David Copperfield do it.
Yeah, that's about it. Or Moses.
Right, maybe. Exactly.
That's about it. Now, there's very few people that have been able to do that. And
very few.
Very few. I think you can count them on one finger. so, yeah. No, that's a bit of a problem. But I thought, Eric, you had a great idea, though, for the rehabilitation of New Orleans.
Oh, that's my... I've got a soundtrack for that too. Actually, the second soundtrack for New Orleans, and I think, of course, this is what we think we might be able to turn it into now. And
what is that? Oh my God! It's the gondolier. It's the gondolier.
That's it. Knights in New Orleans.
Oh my God! Well, they've got a head start. I mean, hell, they already got 5 or 6 feet. They got 9 feet of water in the place.
So what they should do is put a little bit more in, cover up the houses.
No. You just no. This is perfect. All you do is just move everybody up to the third and fourth and fifth floor.
That's right.
And that's your first floor. I say that we start buying gondolas from Venice, and the the music could be, what are they going to call it? New Venice or something?
New Venice?
Or Venice Orleans?
Nouveau Venice.
No, we could have our own. I mean, you think about the tourist attraction. Of course, Fort New Orleans was a tourist. But you know, the other
thing. And it would continue to be.
That's right.
But different people will come to it.
But it's even better than that. Let me tell you, it's even better than that. I whenever I go to New Orleans, the first thing I used to do was to go to a place in the French Quarter called Felix's and get oysters.
Oh, Felix! Oh,
that's right.
Chuck me an oyster.
So now it's called Felix's, but the beauty is
you can just reach down and get your oysters. Fresh oysters.
I mean, no, you talk Beautiful. About seafood; it's out the front door. I'm serious. Your shrimp boat is right outside your front door, and you don't even need a boat. I mean, you live on the second or third story of your place, right? And you throw your shrimp net out the window in the morning, or you go clamming, and you're done. No, but this is great. So and the beauty of this is they're talking about having 2 or 3 months to drain the place. Screw it. Don't drain it.
Absolutely not.
No.
I agree. Absolutely.
This is.
And while you're down there looking for oysters, maybe get some jewelry or something.
Yeah, you know, there's going to be a couple of rings attached to some bony fingers, watches, you know, on some bony wrists.
That's it. It's an underwater dig.
Yeah,
like underwater archaeology.
A diver's paradise.
A diver's paradise. Absolutely. Well,
and you just sort of brush the turd away that comes up against your mask.
Yeah. No. Well, they'd have to do something about. I think they might want to do something.
They have water filters.
But now the other thing is Mardi Gras would take on a slightly different flavor. So
give those floats a whole new meaning.
Yeah, that's right. When they say float now, they mean float.
Instead of beads,
float.
Yeah. They can throw life preservers.
Yeah, right. That's right. Instead of beads. Yeah, well, or
rings, you know.
Well, or lifesavers, you know, the candy.
There you go.
The candy would be lifesavers.
Oh, poor Mardi Gras. I think we should mount a trip to go to Mardi Gras this year to help rehabilitate New Orleans.
Yeah, well.
They'll need the money. There's no doubt about that.
Well, you wonder, of course, you've got to realize that a bunch of my money is going over there now as we speak, whether I like it or not, of course.
Well, I thought about that. We brought up the aid issue last time, whether or not it was a national.
Well, it's of course, interesting. Of course, I'm having some work done on the house here, and it turns out that one of the products that I'm supposed to get in, which is a countertop, comes from west of New Orleans, and they've said it'll be another 2 or 3 weeks before it gets here.
Yeah. 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, not only that, I don't know about
times
you, but
10.
But that's just, I guess, because they have to go way, or they have to go to like through North Dakota now instead of, you know, I-10. They got to go through I-90 or whatever it is up there in North Dakota to get here. But the, you know, it doesn't help any that a bunch of the refineries went down, obviously. A bunch of, you know, some of the rigs out in the Gulf are not
washed up on shore.
Sure. Yeah,
right. That was pretty cool.
You saw the casino that
washed
up.
Oh, yes.
Well, of course, and this shows you the whole stupidity of the political thing. Originally, they had these casinos out in the water. They were supposed to be on a barge, you know, because you weren't allowed to have them on land. There was some law that said you couldn't have them, and they are now.
Somebody's breaking the law. Let's start citing them, you know. Yeah. For every day it's up on land, that's an extra $5,000.
Well, it's, as I say, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature, and certainly if you build below sea level, you might get smoked.
Hey, you know what the relief concert that these people are putting on, you know, all the famous musicians and stuff, you know what it's called to help the hurricane victims?
I'm afraid to ask.
It's called Higher Ground.
Oh, no way. You're lying.
No, it's going to be on like tonight or tomorrow or something. Some big relief concert called
Higher Ground. Makes sense.
It'll be with the Marsalis brothers, Harry Connick Jr.
But I mean, literally 80% of New Orleans was underwater.
Right.
I mean, you're not going to salvage any of the houses.
No, they're
gone. All the drywall is putty and mush.
Yes, but think about it. All the roofs are dry because none of the, you know, I mean, most of the roofs were above water. So all you have to do is just replace everything from the roof to the ground. It's fine. No problem.
That's like saying, oh, we'll just...
Yeah, that's like...
Get your
like,
toe amputated, we'll just replace the rest of the body. You
yeah,
know?
Well, hey, no problem. But at least, you know, the roof is usually the last thing that gets completed on a house. Think about it this way. It's the first thing. So, you know, if it rains again, the roof's up.
That's true.
You know? That is an advantage.
That is an advantage. And, of course, they can use that underwater concrete that, you know, dries underwater and everything to do new pilings and everything. But you're right. The fact is that it's going to be mold city for a while in some areas.
I mean, everything.
Well, and besides, the water is completely contaminated. So it's not just the water causing the mold on the dry. It's the
the fecal matter that is in the water.
It's dead bodies.
Dead bodies. That's right. Well, I'd say
screw
that,
a turd. I mean, you got dead body floating in your house. I'm not ever going back, you know?
Oh, yes.
I would say that they're gonna need some serious chlorine.
Mm.
They're going to have to chlorine that pool.
Man.
I'll tell you, that is something else.
Unfortunately.
But, I mean, I think it literally, because they're talking like $30 billion to rebuild it. I mean,
how much would it cost to build a new one?
Well, that's why we're saying about the Venice thing is you basically, you would have to clean the water up,
mm-hmm.
but they got the pumps for it. Put a big filter on the pump, start to clean that up. You know, the bodies will clog up a little bit, but they can clean that out as they suck them
up.
But
literally, you're going to rebuild everything from the ground up. Like you said, you can spare the roof still. All you're going to do is you're going to pour in some concrete structures to start on.
Mm-hmm.
And then you build everything up from there.
Yeah, I think, though, they do have a small... my guess would be that there's a small problem with the water and electricity infrastructure. Because a lot of that's underground.
Here in Florida, of course...
What do they do in Venice?
They don't have electricity in Venice.
You mean in actual Venice? In the real Venice?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Well, maybe they should do solar power or something.
Water power?
Hey, there you go.
On that one a minute. Well, they got plenty of fuel and stuff. I mean, no, they're just going to have to run. They're going to have to run new power lines anyway. Those power lines aren't going to.
Yeah, no, you're right. They're going to have to run new.
They're going to rebuild completely. So why not just start 6 feet up?
I couldn't agree with you more.
Drop a bunch of pilings down. Just like.
Seriously.
Just like.
Putting a dock in, man.
Building when they built St. Petersburg in here in Florida.
That's right.
Just basically. Well, the little fingerettes.
Oh yeah, well that was all dredge. That was dredge work.
Right.
That's different.
So they brought it up on shore first.
Well, no, what they did is they created it from nothing. What they did is it was real shallow water, and they. I mean, I remember seeing them when I first got here to Florida. You know, way before you guys were born. They had these huge dredges out in the middle, and what they did is they, in order to have the big boats come in, they had to dredge out the channel. Oh, gee, where do we put the dirt? Ooh, let's make some land.
Right.
And they did.
Right.
And sell it. And I mean, if you
fly over St. Pete and you see all those little finger formations, that's not natural.
Mm. Yeah. No, it looks like a bunch of centipedes all over.
Now, what if you had a waterfront probably before that and somebody like built on, you wake up one day and you're.
Well, no, they actually. What they did is, no, and of course they took care of that.
Right.
I mean,
they did it on mangroves and stuff.
Yeah, right. Well, let me tell you, it was interesting because there was a big hoorah.
That manatee family, though.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
They weren't paying anything, so.
Hell no, eat them.
Hey, it's a cow.
That's it.
Sea cow, but it's a cow.
That's good. Let's go milk it.
How's their milk? Yeah, and make cheese out of it.
Make cheese out of the milk. That's right.
Cheetah cheese.
That's something else. Okay, another story. But my point was on the, when they were doing all this dredging and making the land. I mean, what somebody would do is to buy the lot, you know, the one lot, and then basically from that, it was all, you know, it went out like a finger.
Hmm.
So, you know, and put 40 more lots off of that one. So it wasn't like somebody had waterfront and then didn't.
Right.
But the thing, I'll tell you where the big complaints were. It was interesting when we were living down at Pompano Beach, we lived on the intracoastal, more or less, and we had a straight shot, actually, lived right off the intra. I mean, we were on water. But we were on one of the little fingers, and we had every morning we would get up and we could watch the sunrise.
Mm.
And now, of course, there's, you know, 50, 60 story condos. And when they started putting those condos in, a lot of the people that were living around where I was were complaining. They said, well, you're taking away my view. And of course, my answer was, and your point is, you know, what, you know, you had a free ride for these many years. So view's not yours. It's mine now. I bought it. Excuse me. That's why I'm putting up a 40-story condo so I can have the view. I'm paying for it. You know, you can have, you know, view my backside.
You have a view.
It's have a view, right.
It's a view of the moon instead of the sun.
That's right. That's right. Here, moon this. That's right.
All right, back to New Orleans. So they probably, of course, we're somewhat tongue-in-cheek here with the Venice idea.
I'm not.
It's funny. I mentioned it tongue in cheek today in an establishment, and one of the people there thought it was a good idea, and she was serious.
Was it a Fat Tuesdays?
No, it was not. And it, actually, this person was
Skinny
this,
Wednesdays.
Skinny? No, this is Thursday, of course. Oh. So it was, but yeah, no, it was somebody in the banking field. A intelligent
somebody
teller
who invests in gondolas.
Yeah,
all right, let's talk about the political things which hit on New Orleans, like the looting issue.
Looting.
Did you see the looters waving at the camera just because they wanted to be on TV?
Yeah.
They're like, we're in the middle of looting, and they're like, oh, hey, I'm on TV.
I saw the guy pushing the shopping cart going, yeah, baby, you got me, man. Shopping cart full of illegally gotten goods.
I can tell you that the people who were filmed will be the first ones prosecuted.
Yeah. Is that coming from the illegal aspect? They got those people on the...
Oh, they'll nail their ass.
Yeah, know what they look like.
Yeah, I mean this is pretty soon
people age as spiritual machines. They won't even. It'll be automatic prosecution when they do the face recognition.
Well, they're doing. Somebody suggested that they do some little automatic prosecution with an AK-47. You know.
Well, there was a sign on somebody's door: "You loot, I shoot."
Yeah,
that's good.
Well, that's
now. I heard that the Koreans that were protecting their property during the LA riots were actually prosecuted.
No.
That's
really?
What somebody said to me.
I think they were largely exonerated. I think that's what I heard.
But what somebody said, she believed that they were prosecuted, and I thought.
Well, they were probably charged, maybe.
And then they dropped the charges.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no.
This is what they.
They were in fear for their lives.
They had pictures of these guys on the top. You know, guns.
Oh, I saw them live. You know, when it was happening live. You know, Korean man going, "You come, I shoot you." You know.
Well, the problem, of course, here is that there's nobody there protecting. They said they cleaned out one of the Walmarts, for instance, just right to the bare walls. Well, nobody's there. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally nobody's there. And of course, somebody there was a.
But they sent in 10,000 additional National Guards yesterday.
Well, the thinking was that in some of these people, if they're going to get bread and water, it's one thing.
Right, exactly.
But if you're going to go get guns and stuff.
It went from bread and water to shoes, and then from shoes to just televisions and everything.
That was the thing, that the police were letting looters, you know, take the groceries and shoes that quote-unquote fit them. And it's like, I saw some people on there that were taking enough shoes to make Imelda Marcos look impoverished, you know.
That's a lot of shoes. Well, you know,
and they're 30,000.
You can see they're probably going to pop up on eBay.
Slight water damage.
Bidding starts at $1.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to wear most of those clothes, I would think, if they're still in New Orleans. And I think it'd be pretty kind of easy to spot when, of course, get on the thing in your nice new suits.
Yeah. Well, not only that.
They're the nicest damn dressed refugees I've ever seen.
Well, not only that. Think about it. When you move out, say you go up to Kansas City or something for a while with all your new duds, and then you come back to, or even to Kansas City, you walk into a store. Now that little
tag
is still there. Weep, 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 weep. I mean, you're going to get nailed. Your underwear is going to get nailed. I mean, you got to have a special.
You have to loot some of those magnetic demagnetizing.
That's the thing you should have taken. Boy, I tell you, you talk about
somebody did.
I kind of thought myself, if I would have looted, it would have been the smaller, shinier things, you know, things that could have been transferred, changed into money, like jewelry, you know?
I'm sure a lot of that was...
They were pulling stuff off. God, the police were siphoning gas out of abandoned cars so they could keep their cruisers running. Yeah. I thought that was... But of course, that's all part of their martial law.
Well, that's
right. They own everything once that happens.
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys checked. I went ahead and looked at the FEMA powers.
Yeah, yeah. We all know.
Are they strong?
FEMA has amazing emergency powers. In fact, just a brief look at them, they look completely unconstitutional.
Ah, wouldn't doubt it. Well, when you're talking about the siphoning, of course, that brings up the point. Of course, the nice good thing about it is all those girls that were the strippers, of course, they were using them as the siphoners.
Siphoners, that's right. Yeah. You suck on this, baby.
Yeah, that's right.
Once the liquid starts flowing, do what you normally do. Spit it out and go to the next one.
That's it. No, no.
Which bar do you go to? I'm at the wrong one, apparently.
Yeah, what is this? Spit it out business.
No, did you know that the telephone number orders, I mean, you said this FEMA, I just remembered that they gave out the, this is great on CNN, they gave out the telephone numbers that you need to call. The first one was FEMA. The second one was a number for price gouging. And the third one was Red Cross.
Huh.
So, like, in order of importance or something? Like, price gougers are number two? That's pretty good.
Well, of course, it's interesting. There's a big, big hoorah about that, of course, about the price gouging.
Well, the price of gasoline in Atlanta went up to over $5.
Really?
Before the wind stopped blowing.
Well, yeah, but of course that's the market. That's the supply and demand. You don't have to buy it.
What
was happening was that they had a mini riot there. They were creating their own problems. People that didn't need gas were going to get it. And that was stupid. I mean, they didn't need it. It happens all the time. I saw this happen in 1979 when they had the big lines here. I mean, I remember those. And I can tell you that the problem was that they had price controls that were still when Jimmy Carter was in. That's 1979. And when Reagan lifted them, the day Reagan lifted the price controls, the lines disappeared. And, of course, the price went up, and then
every
it went back down.
Every time you limit the price, you limit the distribution.
Yeah, there's no question. And I mean, the market figures it out. Look, here's the deal. If you are in desperate straits in New Orleans, I'm sorry, but you're willing to pay more. If you're willing to pay more, you should be allowed to.
And here's the thing. It goes down to what you were talking about yesterday. The politicians think they have all the answers, but nobody knows what kind of creative solutions the public would come up with.
Right.
Private citizens would come up with if they could be at least – had some reassurance they wouldn't be prosecuted for gouging.
Right.
And there might be rich people ready to be airlifted out of some certain hard-to-get-to neighborhoods that they'd be willing to pay huge amounts of money to get out of there, save their lives, be worth it all the way around. And the thing is, gouging is voluntary.
Well, it is. And, of course, that is – and it's funny because when you call it gouging –
let's come up with a new word for it.
Yeah, you know, we need to because in a lot of instances, well, let me tell you.
So market price is all of it.
Well, it is, of course. And the one thing that I was driving today, I drove down to Ocala today, and the price of gas was varied by literally by 50 cents, depending on which pump you went to.
Prices did you see today?
I saw from basically from 250 cents, from 275 to 310 for regular.
No, that's nothing.
And so,
you know, and I'll say another thing. Everybody think people have this idea of this heartless American person sitting there with a bunch of food and selling it for $10 a sandwich and a kid starving to death right next to him.
Yeah.
And it's just not going to happen that way.
It
the people would charge, they may charge high price. They may charge something you call outrageous price, but then you trade it for it. You know, then you get it.
Yep. Well, not only that, what they're doing is they apparently in Atlanta, because of this, whatever this thing was, the immediate reaction was, for the mayor and some other people said that's why they had the price gouge number. If you felt that you were being gouged, well, of course, nobody. What happens if the price is 10 cents more or 15? You know, at what point are you going to make the phone call? I mean, certainly if somebody's charging $20 a gallon for gas, you don't have to buy it, and you probably wouldn't. But
well, the crazy thing is you buy it and then you call.
Yeah, right. Right.
I mean, that's what's going to happen.
That's exactly what's going to happen. The way I guess they figure they're going to get a refund or something. I don't know. You know, this will show you or whatever. And it's silly, but the one of the things is all economics is on the margin anyway. And so at what point do you call it gouging? If the price goes up, as it did in a lot of places, it went up by 50 cents
It gouging when the guy's standing there with a gun.
And he forces you to buy it.
Right. And until then, you don't.
Yeah, I guess you're right, because you always have the ability to say I won't pay it, and that's this course brings up the thing that I have a big bug about here in town, and we're coming up for this weekend, and that's the game, and of course the police are going to be out there with sting operations what they call scalping, and of course I think that should be legal. You know, if you got tickets and somebody wants to pay you more, I can tell you I remember when one year in 19 I think it was 19 it was a long time ago. I went to a Rolling Stones concert, and I had bought 400 tickets I bought 100 tickets. 100 tickets, I figured I was going to make a killing. And as I was driving up to it was in Jacksonville. The thing was in Jacksonville. And as I was driving up there were people on the sides of the roads, and they were selling this ticket. I think the face price back then, hard to believe, was like 10 bucks, 8 bucks, 5 bucks, something like that, to see the Rolling Stones. Well, it turned out this particular concert was way undersold. And if you bought your ticket, like 5 miles out, it was like 20, 25 bucks. But by the time you got to the stadium, they were a dollar. They were actually below the price.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because there were too many. The place didn't fill up. They didn't fill the stadium by a long shot. And then it rained.
Oh, perfect.
And then of course, Mick came out with his hose and hose, because then it got hot. And he comes out and they put a fire hose on everybody in the middle of the field.
Oh, I thought you meant Mick came out with his hose.
Yeah, I was looking. I was thinking.
No.
Bianca.
Tina Turner.
Tina, yeah.
A hose. Oh, not his hose.
So
my point is that it is one of the things that you find is that the high prices guarantee that people, that somebody in North Dakota or Omaha, Nebraska will zing down there with, you know, all the lumber in the world, whereas otherwise they wouldn't do it.
Right.
And so at least you get the stuff.
Right.
And everything has its price. That's all there is to it. So,
well, including oil, as we know that it's $70 a barrel, there's going to be lots of lines coming online that didn't make economic sense for them to start processing it at $40 a barrel, but at 60, they're willing to separate some gook out of there and get some new oil going.
That's exactly right. And of course, they're gun shy about that because unfortunately it takes.
They got burned before.
They did.
Yeah.
When oil, this is back 25 years ago, oil went to $30 a barrel, which back then was really unbelievable. This is, you know, the equivalent to about $60 or $70 today a barrel. And the oil companies all went into the banks and said, oh, you know, at $30 a barrel, man, you know, we know where we can find it at 20 and get, so loan us the money. Well, it wasn't too long after that, the oil went to $10 a barrel and the banks were left holding the bag.
And O'Reilly was on last night saying that OPEC was gouging us because it only cost them $4 a barrel to make.
Well, of course, this is the other thing that I find interesting. If you were, I don't care who, if Bill O'Reilly was to walk down the street and find 10 ounces of gold laying there, and it would cost him nothing to bend over and pick it up. The question is, would he sell it for $1, $2?
According to him, he should.
Yeah, according to him, he should. But I'll guarantee he'd sell it at market price.
Yeah, there's no question.
And,
yeah.
And of course, the thing is, about when you talk about it, it might only cost the, again, it's all on the margin. It might only cost the Arabs $4 a barrel to bring it out of the ground, but a lot of other people, it costs them $30 or $40 or $50 or $60 a barrel to bring it out. And the price has to stay the same. Basically, oil is a commodity, and commodities have commodity pricing. Commodity pricing means it's all the same. And the price is the same as the production of the last unit. And that's why cars, for instance, are only $20,000. The first car that comes off, it costs $5 million because of all the design work and everything like that. But as you do in mass production, the last one costs $20,000, and that's what they sell them for, or, you know, profit, whatever it is.
Also, just on another note, if it costs them $4 a barrel in Saudi or wherever to getting it, the Kuwait or whatever, to make it, I mean, is that the same? When he says cost them $4, is that the same? Is $4 worth the same to them over there as it is to us here?
You bet.
They're using constant dollars.
Yeah, they're using constant,
dollars.
Yeah, they're using constant.
Because, you know, you hear about people working for 35 cents an hour.
No. Those guys need the money to support their lifestyle. Let me tell you, they have all their private jets and their jewelry and their harems and everything.
Otherwise they'd go practically naked without that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
King Ali doesn't necessarily need our $4.
Right. And O'Reilly was clamoring for Bush to tell the oil companies to cut back profits 20% immediately to help the situation.
Yeah. Okay, you guys
got to cut back your profits. I'm sorry, this is ridiculous.
That's right.
You have to cut back your profits.
Well, of course, again, one of the things that in some instances, I would imagine that some oil companies are really not making much at all. If they have a high price for, if those particular wells are high priced wells, or what about the wells that are not producing all of a sudden?
The wells that are on shore.
Yeah, yeah, that were I mean, out in the Gulf,
right.
And are now.
It cost them like $19.95 to go set that thing back up. You know,
actually, a lot of those are natural gas wells. Those derricks, whatever they're called.
Was that a little natural gas sound?
Yes, that was a...
I didn't have a great sound.
Yeah, it's a sample of a natural gas being produced. Yeah.
Well, no, of course, we don't have to get into the big detail, but a lot of the oil wells also produce natural gas. When you see, for instance, a lot of times you'll see it in refineries. You'll see the flames leaping. Well, they're burning off that as waste.
Right.
And, it's obviously a fuel. If you could find a way to
make
corral
it economical,
make it economical, but it's, you know, they throw it away.
Well, they distill everything unknown. I mean, out of crude, they distill everything.
Right.
I mean, it's everything, kerosene, jet fuel, you know, even the sludge that cruise ships run on all the way up to, you know, naphtha or whatever for your lighters and stuff like that. I mean, everything.
Ether.
Yeah, exactly. It's a distillery.
Yes.
A big still for oil.
Yeah. Anything else about New Orleans?
Yes, tons of stuff. The refugees are going to go to Houston.
Yes.
Oh, which, yeah, well, they
how are they going to tell? I mean, here you take all these people over here.
No, the problem, of course, is that it's not exactly like a motel. I mean, it's a big field.
Right.
And so, you know, like, where do you poop? And, you know, where do you sleep?
Well, they have
no,
good
Houston's
facilities.
All cleaned up.
No, that's not what I'm saying is, though, that you got 5,000 people in one room.
You sleep on the field.
I know that. But, you know, when you have to go to the bathroom, you have to stumble all over all these bodies, number one. At nighttime, what's it going to be like?
I'm saying that there's probably a lot of people that was better off than what they had
in
New Orleans.
Oh, no question.
So
no question.
They're not going to want to leave the
Astrodome.
I mean, they got hot showers. They got meals being provided. I love it. They're all the refugees going, we need food and water and clothes and stuff and new car
right.
and gas and whatever. And they're like,
I need a new watch.
Yeah, a new watch. My
Rolex broke.
Yeah.
Bling, bling.
Yeah. I need some new bling. So, you know. they're sitting there going crazy, and I'm like going, you know, okay, I'm going to wager that you didn't have a lot of this stuff before the accident. So the question is, that how are they going to, you know, they're actually, I have to give the president of FEMA, did you know that last year they asked him to come up with the worst possible natural disaster scenario, and this is exactly it? He actually simulated this last year with a Cat 4 or 5 hurricane wiping out New Orleans, having the stuff break. So anyway, that was, you know, kind of interesting. So anyway, it's going to be interesting to see how they try to resolve it. But
I did chit-chat with a friend, an ex-girlfriend of mine, or a secretary who lives in Bay Minette.
Perfect.
Shut up. In Bay Minette, Mississippi, Alabama, someplace over there. Yeah, Alabama, I think it is. Anyway, she didn't get nailed, at least by the hurricane.
By you.
Yeah, or by me. No. Although she is pregnant. She said that she said what she was seeing of FEMA was a disaster. She said they are just absolutely like Keystone Cops running around. They have no idea. It's just the waste and everything is just mind-boggling. It just nothing is going where it's supposed to. She said she has a new vision of what these people can't do.
Well, they've moved a lot of the responsibilities from FEMA over to the Homeland Security Department.
Yeah, they're sort of combined now.
And I've been watching this guy speak up on the news, and I'm not very convinced of his
competence.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Sorry. I mean, I don't know the man personally, but you know, when you can look in behind somebody's eyes and see that it's kind of blank back there.
Well, let me tell you this. You could say that this fellow, whatever it is, that, like you say, Eric, the head of might have done a test, you know, a virtual test run of this worst scenario, but running a test run and this actual thing are two entirely different things. I believe that.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, and again, they didn't have to deal with the rebuilding of it. This was just trying to get some supplies into people, yeah, and things like that, which I'm sure that they're going to do to some degree. But
well,
at some point in time, it's like with this kind of devastation, the question is, when you're dealing with a society that's fairly poor in general, like New Orleans, the question becomes, when do you cut off the aid?
Well, they've ordered everybody out. I mean, they've ordered everybody to go away from New Orleans, and they're, you know, they want to. It's kind of like when you reformat your hard drive. I mean, they're going to reformat New Orleans, and of course, we think it ought to be Venice. But they're going to reformat it, and they're going to, you know, they basically want everybody out of there.
To evacuate the entire city completely.
It's going to take them a month to even try to lower it. There's no way they're going to get that.
And so when they do, while that's happening, we should be, you know, proposing this across the board.
No,
that
I think we
do not drain the city.
Yeah.
Pump in more water.
Clean. Just filter
just
it.
Pump in
just
some clean
it.
Water. You know?
Just filter. Don't even worry about it.
Maybe we'll get, maybe some drunken FEMA director will hear us and, you know, he'll say, it's a great idea. Yeah.
Or a sober one. Or we could do what?
Or an Italian one.
Is there any way we can make some money on this?
Absolutely.
Can we corral the gondola market somehow?
Of course.
Can we take options, gondola options or something for a while?
When, if any of our listeners have any ideas on how to make money with this, please email.
Email. Jimmy@jimmydone.com.
Yes, Jimmy.
The guys that made all the money in the gold rush of San Francisco were the shovel people, the people who sold the picks and shovels.
That's exactly right.
One of the richest guys there, when he found out about it, the first thing he did is he went to every hardware store. Talk about gouging. This guy went to every hardware store in San Francisco and bought up every single shovel. And the pans that they used, he bought up every one of those. He owned them all. And so, it took back then, you had to have a sailboat. You know, it wasn't like you could take a train across country or anything like that. You had to take a sailboat all the way around Cape Horn or something like that. And
you mean the Panama Canal wasn't there yet?
No.
Oh.
No, the Panama Canal was built in the 1900s, wasn't it?
Yep, started much earlier than that by the French.
And they all got malaria. Yeah.
I hate to laugh, but 25,000 people died trying to. Yeah.
Well, a lot of our guys died too in the process. But anyway, the point is that it's the infrastructure stuff where you make. So the gondolas, paddles. Let's see, the song that you just played, of course, is in the public domain. So that's nothing we can't make.
I'll tell you
what,
they're going to get some good jazz blues music out of this.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
You
can still keep the New Orleans flair. You're just going to just get around differently.
Well, again, the thing is, the beauty is that the food is at your front door now. I mean, right. As we said, you know, prawns and, you know, you want some snake? Here's one coming right
in. It comes right in the front door.
Yeah.
I mean, literally,
wherever you saw chicken on the menu, you put in snake or eel, and
what you call gumbo out there.
Yeah. Boy, they're not guessing. What's in this gumbo? Ooh, you don't want to know. You really don't want to know.
I just scoop out my window and...
and ball it.
That's right. This is going to be a good one. This is a good dish. Every dish, a different taste.
Every dish, different one.
Every bite. Oh, you got a bottle cap.
That's a souvenir worth a lot of money. Keep it.
Yeah, oh, that's worth something.
Now, is that a Baby Ruth bar or no?
No,
it's not.
Horrible.
Now, speaking of horrible, to change the subject a little bit, Martha Stewart said
the bitch is out.
The bitch is out.
She said her confinement was hideous.
Well, for a billionaire, it would be.
Well, I just wanted to say, for anybody, it is. That ankle monitor, put that ankle monitor on you. Boy, nothing feels less free than that.
Yeah, I agree.
You can't, like, take it off to shower or anything, huh?
Nope.
It's been on there for 6 months?
She said she learned how to. She said she learned how to remove it.
Did she?
Yes, she did.
What? You can't remove that thing. I mean, if you do, it's a violation.
I didn't say she did. I simply said she learned how to remove it.
Well, she learned how to remove it last night at midnight when she cut the bitch off.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
They busted about it.
Yeah, they cut that thing. Well,
there's a rubber handle by rubber band, I think, on her.
It's a rubber. Yeah, it is like a rubber band. It's not like a rubber band.
Right. Got a transmitter shock thing on there or something? Or what?
Shock.
Thing. Yeah, right.
So as soon as she walks out of her yard,
tased.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
Tased the homemaker.
Like those dog collars?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a hideous situation, and she's not out of the woods yet. The bottom line is she still has a year and a half of probation left.
Yep. She can't go out and get wasted or anything.
So no booze, no guns, no cavorting with other felons.
That's really? Just all the things that she used to do.
So I guess you can't talk to half of Congress then.
Yeah, there you go. Good point.
Sorry, I can't come testify.
That's right. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I can't go back to court because
there's too many felons there.
That's too funny. I love it. These guys are felons. They're not supposed. They're not allowed to vote in national elections, but they're voting in Congress. I love it.
Oh, that's
well. There's no convicted felons in Congress. Let's get our facts right. People may have been accused of some stuff, but anybody can accuse somebody.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Here it is. For more than 5 months of home confinement, including a three-week extension for violating unspecified probation rules.
Right. Now, they said that what those might have been was she might have stopped off at a yoga class, and she might have gone for a ride around her ranch. Mm-hmm. And even so...
What's wrong with those? What's wrong with stopping off for a yoga class? You're supposed to go someplace.
Yeah, man, to and from.
To and from, okay. And the ride around the ranch is...
That's part of her property. Why would that not be legal?
I don't know specifically why that one was. Probably because it's not home confinement. It's property confinement or something like that. Mm. I'm telling you, here in Florida, we have a zero tolerance policy. You don't make the phone call. You don't file your monthly report. You don't check the box. It's a violation, and...
You go to jail.
Yes.
Right away. Immediately. No, do not pass
they
go.
They issue a warrant for your arrest. From the bench.
Yep. And don't pass and go, and no, you don't collect $200.
Right. I've seen people spend months in jail on these kinds of violations.
Unbelievable. Well, you know, and of course, the whole thing, without going over, I don't want to retread the whole thing, but this was a bogus thing from the start anyway. It was really bogus. The fact that she'd had a big name, and she's rich and everything, somebody wanted when you go out and you find the deer with the big antler, you know.
Right.
I mean, what she did was so, you know, when you think about Bernie Ebers and these guys and so forth, what she did was nothing. And it was, what she actually was, it wasn't insider trading. It was for hiding evidence or something. It was
right, for
obstruction of justice. Right.
Lying to Congress?
No.
She didn't lie to
Congress.
It
was the FBI. They asked her about it and she fudged. She lied. But the bottom line is that, it doesn't seem to me like you should be able to convict someone of the obstruction of justice if you're not going to convict them of the violation of the justice.
Right. Sorry. Well, now, of course, you say that, but it turns out that it could be that the non-perpetrator of the act is the obstructor. You get my drift? In other words, let's say your brother or your son does something wrong, And they come and ask me about it, and I obstruct justice. That's I should be punished for that.
Right. Well, then you're not the perpetrator. You're
right. That's what I said.
Right. Okay. And so,
what you just said was you shouldn't.
I see what you're saying, but in her case, that wasn't the case.
No, in her case, it wasn't the case. That's exactly right, and I agree with you on that. It seems like they dropped back and punted.
They bootstrapped.
Yeah, they realized they weren't going to make the first down.
They charged her with resisting the arrest that they're not going to charge her with.
Right, exactly, exactly. That's right. That's exactly right.
And then to even back up one step further, just very quickly, insider trading, schminsider trading.
Right.
Everybody thinks they know what to do on the inside.
Again, that's one of the things that they have. They passed the Sarbanes-Oxley thing, which is supposed to be a full disclosure so that there's no insider trading and that sort of thing. And, of course, what's happened is a lot of that has in fact, has stopped the flow of information rather than make it more available. So I mean, when these guys get involved in it, they really screw up. So it's too bad. Anyways,
anytime the government gets involved in anything, it gets screwed up. It seems.
Well that's our motto on the Jimmy Doan Show.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there.
Are you taking off, EJ?
I gotta fly.
All right, okay, buddy. Well, we'll see you later.
For EJ.
Okay. Woo-hoo. Yeah. Cook it up. No, they it is amazing how. Thanks a lot, pal. Knock it off on the way. So often there.
Do you have the sound effects from the Pink Panther crash?
No, I wish I did. No, I don't.
They so often the solution is just another problem that they do. They come up with, you know, they've created the problem in the first place, and then they feel like they have to fix it. Only they never take the blame for it, and it's just a problem. But their solution so very often just creates another problem that they have to fix later on.
You got to figure if the insider people knew everything, then they'd never lose.
Right. And of course they do.
And even in Martha's case, the advice that she was given
turned out cost her a fortune. I mean, she lost her ass by selling it too early. So yeah, no, that's exactly right. It's, you know, the thing about it is with so many things, personally, if you had super secret insider information, what that guy, whoever that person is, would be a very successful, you know, mutual fund operator or something like that, and everybody would want to invest with that person. But of course, the rule is not everybody. It's not a zero sum game, but not everybody can be a winner. That is, when you all stocks can go up as productivity increases, as we get richer, everything can rise. Some things like gambling are zero sum. But stocks are not. But still, there are people that lose money. And when you figure the amount of stocks that are traded, then although it's not zero sum, there are more winners than losers, but they're still losers.
Yep.
And so so my point is that not everybody can be a winner, because you have to have some losers. It's like having two teams and they both won the game. No, it doesn't work that way. You know, I'm sorry. There's a winner.
And speaking of winners and losers in the stock area, Merck is probably going to take some hits off this virus thing.
Well, of course, you know what they'll do is they're going to have to pull the same thing that the asbestos people did. They'll probably have to declare bankruptcy. I mean, in order to get out of it.
If the number of cases that are outstanding was multiplied by the verdict that was given in this first case.
It's all the money in the world and then some.
It's $1 quadrillion.
I see. They're
now, what is, I'm sorry. I'm missing a little bit of this Merck thing.
Okay. Okay, well, the deal is that the first verdict was $230 million.
$253 million
for one plaintiff who Vioxx. The lady said that her husband died of heart problems because of the Vioxx. And the jury
came. Vioxx?
Vioxx is a
painkiller.
Is a painkiller. Uh-huh. And it turns out that it's.
And her husband was a 19-year-old raver?
No, no.
He's a 59-year-old guy, but he was a marathon guy.
I mean, he shouldn't have died.
Right.
And what they found was the smoking gun, which was some of the scientists.
The cyanide he took with it?
No. No, they found some emails from some of the research scientists that said, you know, you might want to really check this heart interaction out with this stuff. We're seeing some problems here. And they went ahead and marketed it anyway.
These mice explode in the lab.
That's right. Know? Their hearts came out and... That's right. There was their heart exploding. like in Blade, you know, the vampires in Blade when they exploded.
Right.
Blood everywhere. So anyway, and so they awarded $230 million, you know, that was, you know, $50 in whatever kind of damages, and the rest was punitive or whatever. But as you say, there are something like 4,000 cases pending. And with more coming, you know, everybody took a look at this and said, whoa, I want some of that.
Right. Now, just to be totally clear, Texas law limits that verdict to around a tenth of that.
Right.
But still, it's outrageous.
Well, it'll on appeal, it'll probably be even less than that. I mean, certainly, even in Texas, I don't know. It's hard to say. But like you say, there's not that kind of money in the world. And certainly not in that company. So they will do what so many companies do, and they'll declare bankruptcy. And that way they'll wipe the slate clean in a lot of instances.
I think it's time to change negligence standard.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's a tough call. You when I think about the pills that we do take, I mean, what's
pills?
The alternative is
Jimmy takes Viagra.
Jimmy,
large quantities.
Large quantities. Send it on.
If you have a hard on for more than 36 hours, I want that pill. Please call your doctor. I'm calling a hooker.
Yes. Or two. That's right.
Hello, do you have 2 for Tuesday specials going on?
That's it. No, but I mean, the alternative is death.
Right.
So sometimes the pill might be worth it, I'm guessing.
Well, and again, the market figures that out too. If you see a bunch of people dying off from taking something, then you probably don't want to take that.
Yeah, and I think that, look, nothing is perfect by a long shot. And when you think about doctors and surgeons, and so everybody makes mistakes.
Especially Dr. Nick.
Yeah, Dr. Nick. Hey.
Take my pill. Half price.
Anyway, the point is that the market would figure it out. And every death is a tragedy for sure. And in this particular case, because of they took a gamble. Obviously, if they didn't listen to their scientists saying there might be a heart problem here, and went ahead. I mean, it seems to me it would have been, although this is, like you say, this brings up the other thing. What, and I'm asking you as an attorney, what would have happened if they put on there may cause heart problems on the pill? You know, we have significant evidence that although it's a painkiller, don't be surprised if your heart blows up.
Well, I'm not a civil negligence attorney, but I can say that.
You were warned.
Yeah, right. I don't think they would get much protection. You can't.
Problem, his heart stopped. That's a problem, isn't it?
Given a warning does relieve you of some liability, but there's a certain level beyond which the warning doesn't matter.
Is that what about the cigarette companies? You know, they have a thing on this that says may cause cancer.
Yeah, you know, I saw some cigarettes from Britain the other day, and they had big bold letters on there that said things like may cause impotence. And that's all they'd have. Or it would say, pregnant women, this is bad for pregnant women. Big, big, huge warnings.
Do they have a skull and crossbones or anything on there?
But it was definitely much more blatant warnings. It was interesting. But in my opinion, that should be what you get. You get a warning in, you know, 67% of the cases, this happened, and then you take your chances. They're taking their chances. You take your chances.
So. Yeah, it's a tough call, but it is, as I say, I was looking for an attorney the other day for something that had nothing to do with this sort of thing. I was
what sort of thing was it?
Well, yeah. Look, don't you laugh. But it was interesting to see the literally double pages for one law firm, you know, have you been injured? I mean, what does that, in the Yellow Pages, that has got to be costing them a couple $1,000 a month for that.
Well, the standard is really, I know enough about it to know this. In my opinion, the standard should be changed. Instead of the reasonable person test that they now use, they should use a subjective test. That is, this person, were these people negligent in this case? Were these people, I'm not articulating it terribly well. You have to know it's kind of a complicated standard, but the bottom line is it needs to be changed away from the objective reasonable person test to the subjective test.
Yeah, I wonder, how objective is the reasonable person? It's the judge that makes that determination.
Well, that's the problem, is that
I mean, that's subjective.
Well, you can get a jury to make the determination, but the bottom line is that they're standing there looking at an injured person, and you're asking them in a normal everyday situation, is this kind of an accident going to happen? Well, there's the injured person. So it's easy to conclude, well, yeah,
But the defense would say this is like one in a trillion. I mean, it's, you know.
Right. In this particular case, look at these particular things and then see what happened.
Yeah. Well, as I say, with the problem with the Vioxx was, this is so often the case, is that they did find a smoking gun. That is to say, they found, you know, the email that said, look, I'm recommending that we do.
I'm not saying that they didn't do anything wrong. And, you know, certainly you can still have liability. But I just think that the standard is too easy these days.
It is.
You could say you could raise the standard, the burden of proof, something like instead of preponderance of the evidence to clear and convincing evidence or something like that. But I think the real change that needs to happen, this is a very technical legal thing, but it's changed from a reasonable person test, from the objective test to a subjective test.
Now, I guess as much as anything, even if you knew this would be the thing that would be the hard part of this particular thing, and that is if your tests prove that somebody was going to die. Yeah, there's no question about it. There's somebody who's going to take this pill and die. But we don't know which one or how or who or when it's going to happen. But somebody's going to die. But we're going to put this pill on the market anyway because, you know, we sell millions and millions of pills and it'll relieve pain or whatever it is. But we do know for a fact that statistically somebody's going to die of a heart attack. I mean, I don't know. Would you bother to put that on the market at all?
Well, you'd have to do the number. Sure. I mean, it's like the old girl, little girl in the mineshaft analogy. You still build the mineshaft. If the pill is going to help lots of people but kill somebody, then there is a balancing act. And, of course, the FDA is not necessarily going to approve it if it's going to kill anybody.
Yeah, they have a zero tolerance on that. I mean, I would imagine that if you said, you know, Bush lied and mice died or something like that, then they'd probably say they would not approve it, would be my guess, at all, if one person died.
It's certainly a filter. It's a stricter process than the market would allow. People in general would.
Well, of course, the other thing is, and I'm sure that they do this when, and that, as I say, they found the smoking gun, but on so many of these things, the unfortunate part, and this brings up one of my very, very favorite shows, which is called House, which is about a doctor. Their new series starts here in about 2 weeks. But people lie all the time. And so a lot of these things have interactions with other drugs. And they may even say on there, of course, they try and protect themselves. It says it may make you sleepy, may keep you awake, may have sexual side effects, or may not. As on and on and on the warning label. But by the same token, if you take too many aspirins that day and a Coca-Cola and two bananas, it may turn out that interaction is one that they just couldn't check for, and kaboom, and your blows up again.
A couple hits of LSD.
Yeah, that's right. You know,
catalyst.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, well, I wonder if the crack cocaine had anything to do with it.
Do not take this with crack cocaine and ecstasy or something.
Well, and this is why people conceive of the idea of having a central control like the FDA. But I think that you just let the market figure it out. Let every individual person make their individual decision. You have a situation like the flu vaccine that we had last year.
Yeah,
they try to license these companies. What ends up happening? There's no supply. They limit the supply.
Right.
And they should just let it go. You should be able to ingest whatever you want. As a free American, adult American, you should have absolute right to input. Input of all kinds. And that includes ingestion. And if you do something crazy after that, well, you do something crazy. But if you break the law, of course, you pay.
Well,
you pay.
Yeah, that's right.
It's your risk.
Yeah. And, well, of course, you're right. The theory, of course, so often that pops up is it's a cost to society if you die or if you hurt yourself or something. If you have an effect on your family that you wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah, I'm going to find that Supreme Court case and bring that one up because that when they attributed the effect to general society, that was an extension beyond what it should have been.
Right. Well, again, it's like so many things. It's like 10 standard deviations out. You can always find an effect on everything.
Always.
And so it's so minuscule, though, the immediate effect is to you. You know, that's 99% of it. And then yes, it does affect, you know, you're not breathing air molecules anymore. That's certainly, you know, butterfly effect, something. I mean, you know, that you're decomposing. And which reminds me, speaking of decomposing.
Raising the global temperature.
Raising global, you know, or lowering it, as the case may be. Raising
you
by.
You falsed it.
That's right. I did notice that the median strip, one of the median strips out here, very lush median strip, was sponsored by one of the funeral homes here in town.
Right? Do they have a big tree in
it. I'm telling you, talk about the flowers in that place are gorgeous. It's one of the prettiest median strips there for a long ways around. I'm trying to wonder, what do you use for fertilizer there, buddy? Little miracle what?
We dedicate this median to...
Yeah, no, it's somebody's...
John and Jane.
It says maintained by somebody's funeral home, and I'll tell you, it's lush. Lush, mind you.
They are going crazy with the traffic stuff out here. What is it with these putting medians everywhere? The roads that we've been driving on for 30 years around here, now they've decided to have an impassable curb in the middle of the road.
Oh, well, that's the least of it, of course. Then they have they've decided that they want to do roundabouts, which nobody down here knows what. I grew up with roundabouts. So
the problem with doing roundabouts is that they conflict with the theory of four-way stops.
Right. They do.
And so if you have both, you got it's like no, you can't do both.
No, you can't. But see,
it's like driving on the right side and the left side of the road.
Let me tell you, the problem is that
Canyon Narrow.
The culture here is four-way stop. Because that's where everybody's been. Personally was brought up in a town where you had a lot of roundabouts, and I know how to drive on a roundabout. And what you do is you charge full bore into a roundabout. you stomp on it when you hit a roundabout. I'm serious. I can tell you right now.
It's first one in.
And let me tell you, you haul ass around on two wheels. And I'm not talking about a motorcycle here. I'm talking about a car.
Motorcycle, one wheel.
Yeah, one wheel. That's right. You do a wheelie around the damn thing.
Well, that makes sense because it's a first come, first serve type of thing.
Dude, all you have to do is take a quick glance to the left. If you're not going to actually get hit, you stomp it and you go in.
Now, see, I think we could change all four-way stops into two-way yields.
Yeah?
Two-way yield. Yeah, you have one lane that just goes. If there's no stop sign, you just go. If you're coming the other way, you got to check.
Now, well, see, they have that.
Well, they changed a couple of
bars. So what is the reason for a four-way stop, he asked?
I can't fathom the reason, but I do know that the guy who invented the four-way stop never learned to drive.
Ah, that explains
it. So in my opinion, it's just an overly cautious way of doing it.
No.
Bring everybody up there and look around.
And actually, that causes like more problems than that.
It does, and not only that, but now they've done the four-way yield. Which causes even more problems because they've replaced a couple of our four-way stops with four-way yields, which
right.
And now you got both people slowing down to see if the other guy is going to stop,
mm-hmm.
And then either of them could go,
right.
Or both,
right? Right. So the four-way yield is worse than a four-way stop.
Yeah.
Two-way yield is perfect.
I have the solution. I have the solution.
Let's go rip up all the signs.
Exactly. And you have no yield and no stop, and you cull the herd.
No.
You cull the herd. Let me tell you, if there were no stop signs and no yield signs, let me tell you how careful people would be.
Well, of course, and the main drags would turn out to be the no yields, and the cross streets would be the yields, but they would certainly be confusing streets. And I think you could do it great with two yields. But
well, that's okay, good. And you're a genius. So you figure that out. Thank you so much.
Well, we need to do it, then we'll name it after you. Man, this is a great fraternity prank for any fraternities that are listening out there. Make up a bunch of yield signs.
We are not advocating breaking the law.
Jimmy Don absolutely advocates going out there and ripping those stupid stop signs down and throwing up two-way yields.
Just not this Jimmy Don.
No. Not this Jimmy Don. Right. You know, that they did prosecute. Some kid went to jail for that.
Oh,
He got charged with involuntary manslaughter because they'd ripped the sign up as a prank. And somebody got killed.
I did hear about that.
Yeah, no, we went to jail for that one. No, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. Thank you. Thank you for that.
I was just looking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. You want to try your special effects.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Great.
This is great, too. In a semi-rural area, the people wanted to request the removal of a deer crossing sign because the reason... Too many deers were being hit by cars and didn't want them to cross there anymore.
What a bunch of maroons.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty bad.
The deer were reading the sign, I guess, right? That's the idea? The deer were reading the sign and
That's where they should cross.
Figure that's where they should cross, right, yeah. Right. Too many of them, yeah. So you take the signs down, they'll cross other places.
Right.
Won't get hit as much.
So,
that's all the news I got.
Ah, yes. The Jimmy Doan Show. Another September 1st wrap-up. We'll see you probably in a couple of days again. And don't forget, you can always leave us email at jimmy@jimmydoan.com.
Tell them about the phone thing, Jimmy.
Oh, yes. We have purchased a certified, guaranteed phone device.
doohickey.
A doohickey, it's called, yes. And we'll be able to make phone calls and receive phone calls on the air.
And I got the 800 number info, so when we get the running, we'll get that number out and put it on the website.
That's all we need.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, at least you want to use your own phone number.
What, you think I'm paying for people to call me?
It's like nothing, man. It's almost free.
A 29-minute call from Bahrain.
Well, what was it?
We'll get Yak VoIP.
No, no, why don't we use Skype? We can use Skype, too. That's right. We can use Skype. For all those of you who don't know what Skype is, that's that free, damn near free phone service around the world that works like a champ. I used it when I was in Guatemala.
Actually, it is free if you're doing computer to computer.
Right. If your buddy has Skype, then it is free. You can call your buddy in Germany or Central America or any place for free on your computer. And I'll tell you, it's good quality.
Yeah, it's great quality.
You do need high-speed line, though, right?
Well, not really, but yeah, it's better to have one.
But then I found out you can call if you can call a regular phone number for a penny and a half a minute any place in the world.
Yeah, that's right. They charge euros. All right, that's fine.
Okay.
See y'all later.
Bye. Woo.